Will the House come to order? Would the members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk take the roll?
32 members present.
We have a quorum present to conduct business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, no one is excused from the call of the House today. Representative Collins was excused to a plain time, and I note her presence. I'm comparing my notes to who's present here, and I find that I don't need to request any excused absences.
Okay. Our chaplain today is Vicar Corky Spittler of the Resurrection Lutheran Church. Would the members please rise for the invocation?
Let us pray. O Lord, our Lord, this is truly a great land which you have given us to live and work in. We give you thanks for almost 2 weeks of radiant weather, a time to look around us and see your masterful craftsmanship. As we look to the hills, help us to see, as the psalmist did, that our help comes from you, the maker of heaven and earth. Instruct us in your ways and guide us with your wisdom, that we may make decisions and policies which will be beneficial for all Alaskans. Teach us, O God, to live and work together for each other as all really great lands do. Amen.
The members remain standing while Representative Ringstedt leads us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on the journal.
Are there any objection as to having the prayer spread upon the journal? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Would the clerk at this time please certify the journal for the 36th and 37th legislative day?
Mr. Speaker, there is a correction to the journal for the 36th day. On page 2136, regarding committee substitute for House Bill 327, Judiciary amended, Mr. Maru's amendment number 2 was incorrectly printed, and it should read as follows, and this amendment has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk as it should read. With this correction, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 36th and 37th days and House Supplement numbers 86 and 87.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the journal for the 36th and 37th days as corrected by the Chief Clerk and House Supplements 86 and 87 be approved as corrected.
Are there any objection as to the correctness of the journal and the supplement journal? Hearing no objections, the journal and the supplement stand approved. Do we have any guests for introduction at this time? Representative Herman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery A, I'd like to introduce constituents of mine, Peter and Patricia Kust, and Charles and Pat Franz. And Mr. Charles Franz is a former member of this body serving in the first Alaska legislature.
Representative Franz, as a distinguished member of this body, will extend to you the privilege of the floor for a few remarks, if you would care to.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I really haven't prepared anything. I noticed that my former seat seems to be taken up by a very able legislator, which is, I believe, Pierce. That was my seat. I had former Governor Hammond was on my right, and a Mr. Hansen Valdez, I believe, was on the left. All these things bring back fond memories, so I carry to my grave. And very proud to be able to come back after 26 years and see these halls again. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us today. Any further guests for introduction? Go for Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce Billy Morgan from Antioch and his daughter, Linda Morgan. Are they here? Billy Morgan and Linda Morgan. And there's Billy, Linda, and Leonard Morgan, Phil Simeon, Guzma Peterson, Sr., Joseph Nikolai, Andrew Fredericks, Jerry Peterson, Sinka Sakar, and also Ken Selby. Would you please help me welcome them?
Any further guests for introduction? Messages from the governor.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, the Senate approved the following citation and it is transmitted for consideration. Honoring Bill Cooper by Senators Bennett and Fahrenkamp. And the Senate approved the following citations and they are transmitted to enrolling. Honoring the North Mountain View Improvement Committee. Honoring Lars Eide. Honoring Village Public Safety Officers Program graduates. In memoriam Jan Butrovich Evans and in memoriam Cyril A. Coyne. The Senate has passed committee substitute for House Bill No. 111, Transportation Amended, with the following amendment. Senate committee substitute for committee substitute for House Bill No. 111, Transportation Amended Senate, relating to local service roads and trails, effective date, and it is returned for consideration. The Senate passed and returned committee substitute for House Bill No. 118, Judiciary, an act relating to small claims and the duties of magistrates and providing for an effective date. This bill has been sent to enrolling. The Senate has passed the following, and it is transmitted for consideration. Senate Bill No. 330 by Fakes, an act relating to civil liability for veterinary care and providing for an effective date.
One standing committee, Judiciary.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Do we have any other communications that should come before this body?
Yes, there's a communication from Representative Ben Grusendorf, Speaker of the House, to the Governor. Pursuant to AS 4137, I am to appoint two public members to the Citizens Advisory Council on Federal Areas in Alaska. I am hereby appointing Mr. Andy Hope III and reappointing Ms. Dorothy Jones. Signed sincerely, Ben Grusendorf. I have no further communications, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down on the calendar to the reports of standing committees.
The Transportation Committee has considered Senate Joint Resolution 30 relating to passenger service by Korean Airlines in Anchorage and recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Cato Chairman, concurring Cato, Schultz, Herman Maru, Furness Davis, and Pinalberry. Senate Joint Resolution No. 30 has no further referral. The Committee on Judiciary has considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 47 Hess amended, hospital inspections and investigations by the Department of Health and Social Services, and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute or House committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 45 Judiciary with the same title, recommends it do pass. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, concurring M.M. Miller, Sun, Grunberg, Taylor, Pettijohn, and Phillips. Clarkson has no recommendation. Senate Bill 45 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. We have received a zero fiscal note from Rules on Committee Substitute for House Bill 407 Resources. The Committee on Labor and Commerce has considered House Bill 424, establishing the Board of Behavioral Science Examiners, amending Rule 504 of the Alaska Rules of Evidence, under consideration, and recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 424, Labor and Commerce, with a new title, and recommends it do pass and attaches a new fiscal note. The report was signed by Navarre Chairman, signing Dupas, Davis, and Boucher, having no recommendation. Navarre, Collins, Hanley, Kopanen, and Pierce. House Bill 424 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 452, restricting the use of grant funds, and recommends as follows. The report and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Gall Chairman, signing Dupas, Phillips, and Maru. Furness signed Dupas, Good Bill. Signing Do Not Pass, Wallace. Having no recommendation, Gall, Grunberg, and Kopanen. House Bill 452 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Resources Committee has considered sponsor substitute for House Bill 510 relating to game farming and recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note with analysis. The report was signed by Schultz, Chairman. Signing do pass, Schultz, Herman, Cato, Pierce, Sund, and Jenkins. Signing do not pass, Thompson. Sponsor substitute for House Bill 510 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees.
The House Special Committee on Fisheries has had House Bill 355, authorizing the establishment and implementation of onboard observer programs under consideration, and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 355, Fish, with the same title. Recommends it do pass, attaches a letter of intent and a fiscal note. The report was signed by Gall Chairman, signing do pass, Gall, Hurley, Thompson, Navarre, and Binkley. Having no recommendation, Jenkins and Maru. House Bill 355 has a further referral to the Resources Committee. The House Special Committee on State Loans has considered House Bill 479 relating to biomass fuel systems and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Sund Chairman, concurring Sund, Duncan, and Euling. Cotton has no recommendation. House Bill 479 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The House Special Committee on State Loans has considered House Bill 533, issuance of tax-exempt state-guaranteed revenue bonds by the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to finance mortgages for qualifying veterans under AS 1856, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Sund Chairman, signing do pass, Cotton, Duncan, and Sund. Having no recommendation, Euling. House Bill 533 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. I have no further special committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us to introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation honoring Paige Adams by Representatives Hurley, Larson, and Navarre, and Senators Curtula and DeVries. Citation in memoriam, Justin Mayo by Representative Navarre. I have no further citations for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Those citations will be referred to the Rules Committee for calendaring.
I have no resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
Sponsor substitute for House Bill number 506 by Taylor, Grunberg, Larson, Sun, Schultz, Kopanen, and Jenkins. An act relating to insurance and providing for an effective date.
Three standing committees, Labor and Commerce, Judiciary, and Finance.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us to the consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item upon today's calendar?
House Bill 162 by Clarkson, Collins, Davis, M.M. Miller, Navarre, Grunberg, Duncan, Kopanen, and Hurley. An act relating to public utility, consumer representation, and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Judiciary has had House Bill 162 under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 162, Judiciary, with the same title, recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, signing do pass, M.M. Miller, Clarkson, and Grunberg. Signing do not pass, Pettijohn and Taylor. Having no recommendation, Phillips and Sund. The Committee on Finance has had the bill under consideration and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 162, Finance, with the same title, reports it back as follows with a new fiscal note. Report was signed by Adams, Chairman. Signing do pass, Adams, Duncan, Porchot, Szymanski, and Cotton. Signing do not pass, Ringstad and Frank. Signing no recommendation, Larson, Euling, and Binkley. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 162 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the committee substitute Finance? Hearing no objections, the committee substitute Finance has been adopted. We have several amendments before us. Would the clerk please make reference to the First Amendment?
Amendment number one by Clarkson. Page 3, line 2, change 1985 to 1986.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that amendment number 1 be adopted.
Are there objections to amendment number 1? Hearing no objections to amendment number 1, amendment number 1 has been adopted. Would the clerk please read the second amendment before us?
Amendment number 2 by Martin. And it starts page 1, line 14, and it has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk.
Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent. Amendment number 2 be approved.
Yes. Hearing objections, proceed, Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, I kind of thought we had a gentleman's agreement. I would approve technical amendment number 1 if technical amendment number 2 would be approved. But there seems to be differences. Basically, what this does, sir, is to ensure that the attorney requested in this bill, appointed by the Attorney General, be an attorney within the State Department of Law, rather than someone else who may be attorney from any other choice. I felt that it would be important that that individual attorney be protected by state law as a state employee, rather than an individual working within the Department of Law being completely different.
Any further debate upon amendment number 2? Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I oppose the amendment, and it appears from the explanation that it would have the reverse effect from that intended by the sponsor. Placing an attorney in the partially exempt service would allow the attorney to be fired for political reasons. The purpose of the language that's in the bill now is to attempt to some degree, politically insulate these people so that they can aggressively represent the interests of residential consumers or utility service and be protected from being terminated for being aggressive in that representation. So So I think the goal would not be accomplished by the amendment, and I ask that it be defeated.
Any further discussion on amendment number 2? Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Our laws and regulations protect all employees from being fired for political reasons or other grievances that they may have. And it seems to me, if you believe in the laws of the state and our statutes that clearly protect them from being fired for political reasons, racial reasons, sexual reasons, or any other thing, that we should have this person within the protection of the state for all citizens. I fail to see where he says someone may be fired for political reason. If you have a governor like that, then perhaps you can impeach him.
Are you ready for the Representative Clarkson?
Mr. Speaker, AS 3925-120, which is referred to in the amendment, says, in part, a person holding a position in the partially exempt service is not eligible for a hearing by the personnel board in case of dismissal, demotion, or suspension. And I suggest to you that there is in fact a legal ability to terminate someone who is in the partially exempt service if they aggressively represent consumers.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Ewling.
Can we have an ease, please?
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we had amendment number 2 before us in debate. Is there any further debate upon amendment number 2? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number 2 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk locked the roll. Or take tally the board.
Maybe I can do that. 8 yeas, 31 nays.
Amendment number 2 has failed adoption. Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk?
Not on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 162 as amended by the House be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the advancement from second to third reading? Hearing no objections, would the clerk please read that bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 162, Finance amended by the Finance Committee, an act relating to public utility, consumer representation, and providing for an effective date.
Is there any debate? Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I just want to encourage the enactment of this legislation. It provides consumer advocacy for utility residential rate payers throughout the state. It is an advocacy that I believe is necessary, and particularly in front of the Alaska Public Utility Commission. There are at least 37 states that have this method of providing consumer representation or some similar method. The first of those pieces of legislation was enacted in the 1920s. This bill has been floating around the legislature since 1977, and I think its day has come. The studies in a number of other states indicate that the amount of money spent on legislation such as this is recovered many times over in reductions in utility rates to consumers. Let me give you some quick examples. In Ohio, they spend about $500,000 on the budget of this consumer advocacy agency, and for one three-year period in the study, they save $61.3 million in reduced utility rate increases. That is less of an increase than was requested. In Massachusetts and Missouri, a budget of about $400,000, they save $47.5 million. North Carolina saved $50 million in a single year. Florida, Arkansas, Mississippi, New Mexico combined, in another study, saved $118 million between 1978 and 1980, and that's in reduced utility bills to residential consumers. Of that amount, $49 million was a direct refund to consumers of rates that had been approved and then were rolled back because of the involvement of an agency similar to the one in House Bill 162. Mr. Speaker, it is clear that both sides need to be represented in front of the Public Utility Commission. The residential consumer needs to have a voice in front of that commission. We have a number of issues that are before that commission and the Federal Communications Commission, a rural telephone service, royalty gas issues in the rail belt area, NSTAR gas rate increases, on and on and on, the numbers of issues where somebody needs to advocate for residential consumers to make sure that they don't pay any more than they absolutely have to for the utility bills. Now, Mr. Speaker, I don't... all utilities are not bad. No utility is bad. But it is important to have the other side represented. The utility makes a case. Somebody needs to make a case for the other side in front of the Public Utility Commission. That is not the statutory responsibility of the Public Utility Commission. And this bill will assure that residential consumers are represented by experts that can deal with those rate increases and identify where they're not necessary and make those arguments to the Public Utility Commission or the FCC, whichever is appropriate.
Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would urge the membership to vote against this bill. If I may quote from the fact sheet handed out from the prime sponsor in the last sentence, the commission acts as a judge in listening to testimony from utilities and other interested parties. The commission staff represents the combined interests of the utility, commercial users, and residential ratepayers. Mr. Speaker, maybe there's a problem where the APUC is not representing one group or another. I don't know. However, I can't see why, if there is a problem, the legislature should throw another $233,700 at the problem, hire some more state employees to fight with other state agencies to try to get to the bottom of the issue. The APUC has a large budget as it is. This is hardly a money-saving move for the state. I think if there is a problem with the APUC, we should address that problem at the organization and the staffing of the APUC, but not create another group to further complicate the state government bureaucracy we already have.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I hadn't planned on addressing this bill, but I just feel compelled after hearing the representative from the Hillside, who shares many constituents' needs that I also share with regard to the lack of representation in APUC. Let me tell you that the Hillside residents don't have any representation in APUC. It's a quasi-judicial entity. So when those consumers go to that utility entity and say, I want to protest the extension of a utility across my property where I'm going to be levied a fee or a tax or going to be charged unfairly, they have no way to be appealed. They have nobody advocating for them because the utility members that are sitting there, or at least the people who are supposedly the public representatives there, say to them, guess what? I'm a quasi-judicial entity. I can't hear your plea. If you want to, go hire an attorney, come before us, and scream about it. But there's nothing you can do. You're too blocked. There's almost nothing you can do today as a private citizen to have your case presented to them unless you go out and develop independent representation. And I think the people in the Hillside and in South Anchorage, who are being many times rolled over by utility extensions, need an advocacy. And I think it's a small price to pay for the public's right to have access to that process.
Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a few brief comments. I, too, have picked up the statement in the Majority Leader's information in that the Commission does represent the ratepayers, the commercial users, and the utility. The representative from Bird Creek had indicated that the consumer currently has no representation. It's my understanding, Mr. Speaker, that we have passed funds to an organization called ACAP, and one of their responsibilities was to represent the consumer. Mr. Speaker, I have a question to the sponsor of this legislation. One is, please share with the body evidence that the consumer, first of all, cannot pay, and second, Mr. Speaker, share with this body the rationale as to why we should institutionalize this function rather than going to the private sector. My chief concern, Mr. Speaker, is we will have a state-paid attorney general representing the APUC and a state-paid attorney general representing the consumer group. We have two layers here of bureaucracy, state attorney against state attorney. Doesn't make sense. Seems if ACAP has been successful, maybe the problem has been funding. That being the case, Mr. Speaker, I think we need to look closer at that.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in opposition to committee substitute for House Bill 162. I find it unfortunate that I may do so because I've always considered myself a very strong advocate of individual people and consumers. However, I think this bill represents an opportunity for the members of the House of Representatives. Indeed, Mr. Speaker, I consider this an opportunity to deal with a very basic policy question for the 14th legislature. Will we continue to add to the bureaucracy when, in fact, it is not necessary? In my judgment, Mr. Speaker, the motive here is impeccable. Consumers do need advocacy before the APUC. Of that, there is no question. I have no problem with the suggestion, the poll that is mentioned, and the fact sheet that utility customers can best be presented at the state level through the creation of state-funded offices of consumer advocacy. We have that, Mr. Speaker. Indeed, we have two state-funded offices of consumer advocacy. The APUC staff is 45 people. Many of those are lawyers. The suggestion has been made by the sponsor of this legislation that these people are not, quote, experts, unquote. Part of the rationale in the fiscal note is that many experts would have to be called to advocate on behalf of consumers. I would like to know, Mr. Speaker, that if the lawyers that are part of the APUC staff are not, in fact, experts in consumer advocacy before the APUC, who indeed is? They are, in fact, experts. And part of their function, very clearly, is to advocate on behalf of consumers. I have no problem with the suggestion that the APUC members themselves are objective judges in those dockets. That is, in fact, their role. But that does not suggest that the staff cannot and should not present to them the pros and cons of those dockets and serve as a sounding board for the arguments, in this case, the arguments on behalf of consumers. If that function is not being handled at the APUC staff, this is one representative who wants to know why it is not. Second, as my colleague pointed out, we have yet a second group which advocates on behalf of consumers, known as ACAP, the Alaska Consumer Advocacy Program, which indeed, Mr. Speaker, has been funded by action taken by the sponsor of this legislation. In FY86, there is $120,000 in this year's budget that goes to ACAP. I have no problem with that whatsoever. In FY87, the governor's budget calls for a reduction to $75,000. But the point is, Mr. Speaker, we have not one, but two groups, which currently are funded by state government, who advocate on behalf of consumers. Mr. Speaker, I draw attention to the fiscal note analysis for a committee substitute for House Bill 162 and the sentence on page 3, which says, obviously, a small staff such as this cannot intervene in every public utility matter that may adversely impact residential consumers because the cost for doing so would be prohibitive. Mr. Speaker, I submit that statement is absolutely accurate. But it is also absolutely accurate at the present time. We have two groups whose function it is to advocate on behalf of consumers. They do not have the budget to intervene in every docket. Indeed, they could never expect to intervene in every docket. There are literally hundreds. They go on for years. Everyone recognizes that the state's ability to provide consumer protection is limited. Mr. Speaker, I mentioned that my problem with this bill was that I saw here an opportunity to speak to a legitimate policy question. And that is, Mr. Speaker, the opportunity to cast the die for the second session of the 14th legislature. Are we, in fact, going to be fiscally responsible? Are we going to change the direction as relates to the growth of the bureaucracy in this state? I believe, Mr. Speaker, that many of us were elected to these positions as freshmen because we advocated that time had come. I believe even more strongly in the second session of the 14th legislature that that is true. Mr. Speaker, You have a fiscal decision before you. This bill has an appropriation of $230,000 that is required to put it into effect. Mr. Speaker, my strongest objection to this legislation being before us today is the timing. We will not receive the latest revenue projections on which we will make budget decisions for another few weeks. I submit to my colleagues that it is not the appropriate time to be asked to make a fiscal decision prior to having those revenue projections. We do not know how much money we're going to have in fiscal year 87, yet we are being asked to make a decision today in the absence of that information. I have a problem with that. I do not believe that is the way we should go about our duties. Mr. Speaker, the colleague who preceded me suggested that APUC and ACAP had considerable money already. I would like to know if there is any suggestion in this legislation, perhaps in a letter of intent, that would specifically speak to reducing the budgets of the two other government entities which already represent consumer advocacy if this legislation passes. Both ACAP and APUC currently provide this function. We have a limited ability to provide services. We have a fiscal responsibility to make these decisions in light of the most current information. I ask my colleagues to consider all of these things in making this decision today. To sum up, Mr. Speaker, my objection to this bill is sincere. The objective is very good. No one will argue against the need for consumer advocacy. But what we have is the situation already being addressed, not by one, but two other entities. We have not the most recent fiscal information on which to make this decision. And, Mr. Speaker, for that reason, I will vote against this bill.
Representative Martin.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I find myself disagreeing with the majority leader in the responsibility of APUC. He mentions in his pass out here that APUC is not responsible for representing consumer interest and rate charges. However, Mr. Speaker, from the documents obtained from OMB and also those that are in our annual report for BRU narratives, it makes it very clear what the function of APUC is: to protect the public for certifying utilities, and then it goes on to facilitate at just and reasonable rates, conditions, and terms. And then, Mr. Speaker, it goes on even further to say specifically, pursuant to Alaska Statute 44.83, the Commission approves any tariff revision, including rate changes. This involves analysis, audits, and formal public hearings when required. The Commission is also responsible to formal and informal consumer complaints. And Mr. Speaker, it seems to me that it's very clear what they are responsible for. And if they are not doing their job, perhaps we should do something with that commission. If memory serves me well, some of the most recent appointments, say within the last 5 years, were appointed to that board or that commission specifically to take the seat of the consumer advocacy. I think it was at least 8 years ago, or maybe 10 years ago, a special addition to that board was made for one seat to protect the consumer. Now, last year, sir, we appropriated $4,073,000 to APUC, with 51 full-time positions being authorized. I don't necessarily think that's a disagreement with the formal speaker. Maybe they didn't fill in all the positions that they were authorized. He said 45. This, to me, seems to be setting up a separate commission, a separate identity or agent or department, whatever you want to call it, in the Department of Law, doing exactly what APUC is supposed to do. And I have a conflict with that. We're going to have one group protecting the public's interest, who in turn are going to oversee what APUC is supposed to do, to oversee what they are doing on behalf of the public. And yes, we have a third identity. We have Alaska Legal Services that also can handle complaints for the consumers. Alaska Legal Services under 2455-275 can handle such complaints. And last year we funded them with $1 million for handling such complaints. The major point is, I think we're all saying, is that how can the public be assured with another agency, even though it's just beginning with a small group of three people? The major problem is that they were ballooned. Because the key word in this whole packet that disturbs me, on page 1, line 27, they can initiate hearings. Well, that's the whole idea of APUC to do that. So if we have this group initiating hearings too over rape charges and consumer complaints, they're not going to be able to do very much with the proposed updated fiscal note of $233,000. Obviously, they're going to take a large part of the Department of Law's budget, and I don't know how, within the department, of course, they can change that. But the main thing is, by statute, we have an agency responsible for exactly what this bill says is supposed to be done. If that's the problem, then perhaps we should abolish APUC and put their functions under the Consumer Protection Agency or under the Department of Law. We've done that in, like, mobile homes, and it's worked very well. And I think we did save money from where it would normally under commerce and economic. So if the machinery is not working right, then there are better ways to fix it at a lot less cost.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I would like to agree, at least in part, with my colleague from Kodiak who just spoke, said this was an opportunity for this body. I guess our difference is the opportunity for what? For me, Mr. Speaker, and I hope for the rest of this body, this was an opportunity for us to show the consumers of the state, the little people of this state, that even in a year of declining revenues, we're not going to abandon their just cause. We're not going to turn back and say, sorry about that, if you don't like what the decisions are, you just hike yourself down there and hire yourself an $80 an hour lawyer, and sure enough, you've got just as much right to appear before the APUC or anybody else as those utilities that have a whole bank of lawyers. You've got every right in the world to do that. Yes, sirree. I'm sorry that you don't have any money, but that you're just a consumer, just a person on the street, but nevertheless, you've got the right. I don't think, Mr. Speaker, that we want to take the opportunity to send that message to the people of this state. I think we want to take the opportunity to show that the citizen, the consumer, the utility user can have a voice. Now, it's important to realize that the APUC, as other members have touched on, is a quasi-judicial body. They sit almost like a court, and in a sense, the staff also sits almost as a court. They listen to the conflicting sides that come in, and from those discussions and some of their own independent research, they make decisions. You can be very well assured that the utility companies themselves, some of which are public and some of which are private, you can be very well assured that they are going to be very well represented by lots of high paid, high caliber, and I'm not detracting from them for an instant, very good and necessary representation before the APUC and before the staff. You can be absolutely assured that their story is going to be well heard. You cannot be assured, absent the legislation that my colleague is proposing today, we can't be assured that the other side will even be heard at all. Indeed, we can't even be sure that they'll even know what's going on until they get their utility bill the next month and find out that something's been hiked, 15% or 18% or 27%. Mr. Speaker, I just really hope that we won't take the decline in revenues that we're all legitimately concerned about as an excuse to abandon our obligations to the smaller people of this state.
Any further debate? Representative Pettyjohn.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Another point, just very briefly on this matter. What the bill would do, the Finance Committee substitute, would be to set up a section of the Attorney General's office to fulfill the functions that have been discussed. And I find this in conflict with current statutes, in particular 4205.111, which is very brief, and I'll just read it. It says, the Attorney General is legal counsel for the Commission. The Attorney General shall advise the Commission in legal matters arising in the discharge of its duties and represent the Commission in actions to which it is a party. If, in the opinion of the Commission, the public interest is not adequately represented by counsel in a proceeding, the Attorney General, upon request of the Commission, shall represent the public interest. So that section essentially says that if the public interest needs further protection in an individual proceeding, APUC can go to the AG right now. if it's a kind of a case where that's appropriate. And the situation we've got here, this bill says that the Attorney General can file lawsuits to have the decisions of APUC overturned. Well, if it does that, who's going to represent APUC? They can't have the Attorney General representing both sides. So they're going to go out and have to hire an attorney to represent them. And I don't think that's represented in the fiscal note. So I think we're all believing consumer protection, but I'm not sure that putting this function in the Attorney General's office is the appropriate way to do it. Thank you.
Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to look at the practicality of the situation a little bit with regard to what actually happens when a rate case comes before the APUC. It seems to me that the APUC, by their very nature, would have to take the consumer's standpoint, both residential consumers and commercial consumers, of which there are probably about 80,000 in the state that wouldn't be protected under this bill. But anyway, it would seem to me that the APUC would naturally respond to a rate request for increase with a kind of how come attitude, and make the utility prove that their costs had in turn gone up and that the consumer is going to be benefited by this rate increase. I think that when members characterize a rate increase as a bad thing, they're not really looking at economics of the situation all thoroughly. Sometimes rate increases are necessary, and it isn't necessarily a savings to the consumers in the long run to be denied a rate increase. If you don't get a rate increase, maybe you don't do the maintenance that you should do. Maybe you don't come into a new area that you should come into to bring your overall cost down. So I think the characterization that increased rates are, in fact, of long-term benefit to the consumer may not always be the case. And I'd like to also go back and touch on the commercial consumers. If we shift the delicate balance that we have now that's been in existence since the APUC was created, we're going to shift costs. We're not going to save costs. We're going to shift costs. We're going to shift costs to commercial consumers. And those commercial consumers can and will pass those costs along to all of us, regular consumers. And so if we think by this legislation that we're actually going to save consumers money, I don't think you can make the transition quite that easily. The fact is that the costs are there, and those costs have to be justified before the APUC, and that those costs should be allocated properly to and fairly to between residential users and commercial users and industrial users and all the kinds of users, so that fair rates of fair maintenance costs are allowed, and that the public at large benefits. And I feel that APUC is charged with those responsibilities now, and that is their attitude. Their attitude is one of keeping rates as low as they possibly can be, but yet allowing necessary costs for maintenance and other items. And I think that one last point would be that if we do shift costs from other users, from one set of users to another set, class of users, we're going to create subsidies. And we're going to create subsidies that will mean a less efficient use of the resource. If it costs less, you're going to use more. Simple economics. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, to attempt to respond to some of the concerns about this legislation, let's first of all address the question that the Alaska Public Utility Commission has this responsibility now, and a couple of people have quoted the fact sheet that I distributed. I think that there maybe isn't quite an understanding of the statutory responsibility of the commission. The responsibility of the commission is to represent the public interest. That includes the interest of the utility, the interest of the commercial utility ratepayer, the residential utility ratepayer, and the non-ratepayer. They have to consider all of that, and then they come up with one recommendation. The point is that the commission doesn't get the word specifically from the residential consumer. And if I can use a buzzword here, the residential consumer of utility services is a special interest. Happens to be every constituent of ours in this body, but it is a special interest. It is not the public interest. The obligation of the Public Utility Commission is to represent the public interest, to protect the public, as one member said. That is the same obligation that a judge has, to represent or to protect the public. But they need to hear both sides on the issue. And let me tell you, I don't know how many of you follow the PUC in the hearings we've had. The residential consumer is not adequately being represented. Now, on the conflict of interest question, we asked that question when this legislation was considered. At the time, there was an attorney general's opinion that indicated it was not a conflict of interest so long as separate people are representing both interests or different interests. And in fact, that happens all the time in the Department of Law, and it certainly is not in violation of the statute quoted by the prior member. The other thing to keep in mind is that the money that's spent by a utility to attempt to convince the APUC to approve a rate increase is in fact passed along to the ratepayer. Therefore, it is our constituents who are paying for the lawyers and the economists and the other people that are hired by the utilities. So it seems to me that we ought to balance that out by providing some advocacy for the utility consumer. And the final question with regard to the Alaska Consumer Advocacy Program, several members here are exactly correct. That appropriation in past years does duplicate what this legislation is seeking to do. And if this legislation is enacted into law, I would assume that the appropriation to ACAP would no longer be necessary.
Representative Maru.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the hopes of shedding some light on this matter, let me paraphrase, if I may, some testimony which was given by Dave Hutchins, Executive Director of the Alaska Rural Electric Cooperative Association, before the Judiciary Committee. The Alaska Rural Electric Cooperative Association, known by the acronym ARECA, represents, as I remember, 11 electric cooperatives, which is about half of all electric utilities in the state. This testimony was given before the House Judiciary Committee exactly 1 year ago, as of tomorrow afternoon. Since few of us were at that meeting, and probably nobody can remember exactly what was said, let me paraphrase. This bill would set up a new public office which would not be responsive or directly controlled by consumers of any particular utilities or all utilities together. And let me point out that ARECA represents cooperatives. The cooperatives are owned by the consumers. They elect their own boards of directors. If they don't like the way things are going, they can change it through their board of directors now or vote the board of directors out next year. Let me emphasize that. I'm speaking about an association that represents utilities owned by the consumers paying the utility bills. Furthermore, the association unanimously opposed a similar bill last year, that was in 1984, primarily because of the additional cost they see coming to the regulatory process that would have to be paid for by the utilities and consequently by their consumers as a result of this bill. The bill would definitely increase the length of hearings and proceedings. That means the cost will definitely go up. Another concern is that this proposed new office would be required to represent only residential consumers rather than consumers generally, although the statutes require the utilities to treat all classes of consumer fairly. So on the one hand, we have statutes that say the utilities must treat all consumers fairly, and yet this would set up an office only to help residential consumers. This would be one more government entity following up on another. Now, is this silly or is this silly? I thought the Alaska Public Utilities Commission itself was supposed to be a consumer advocacy group. Why do we need another one? Bear in mind, the governor appoints both groups. The governor appoints the attorney general. The governor also appoints the members of the Alaska Public Utilities Commission. So they can already fight each other. They can already do that. Why do we need somebody else to get in the middle of the thing? Why don't we, in fact, allow, as an alternative, more competition instead of more boards, more commissions, and more regulations? Now, the cost of this over the next 5 years, as you can see in the fiscal note, is greater than $1.3 million. Perhaps some of you have seen $1.3 million in one place at one time. I have not. Maybe someday I will. But to this date, I have not. That is a lot of money, they tell me. It's certainly more than I've ever had in my bank account, and I think it's too much. To sum it up, this would be, if we did it, and I agree with various representatives who've already spoken, the worst sort of bureaucratic empire building because it would be mandated by the legislature. This will not help the consumers. Let me repeat that. This will not help the consumers. It will only help attorneys.
Representative Sund.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to speak a little bit on this bill. I'm going to speak in favor of it. And most of the discussion has been directed towards APUC, but I'd like to point out to the body that there are many areas here that are not covered by APUC. I think the ultimate goal of any rate structure setting is to come up with fair rates. And I think you come up with fair rates when you have all the evidence or the information presented to the body. And I think this bill gives an opportunity here for the consumer, the residential consumer in many areas that may not have the capability to represent themselves or get the technical data together to shed a different light on rate structures. And I think this is an add-on to those areas of the state where APUC is not involved. And most of those are public utilities that are owned by the public. And I think this is an opportunity for those ratepayers who have an ability to participate. And I will point out there are areas of this state in which there are ratepayers that are buying electricity from public utilities that do not vote on those public utilities. And I'll give you an example in Ketchikan. The public utility in Ketchikan is owned by the city of Ketchikan, but it sells power to the borough residents, and the borough residents do not get to vote on who's on the city council, who nominally appoints the KPU advisory board who gets into the rate-making structure. So this is an opportunity for those people to have access to some expertise to represent their interests before that rate-setting body, and I'll support the legislation for that reason.
Representative Pignalberry, you have been seeking the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess we've heard all the debate. A question is raised in my mind about the Public Utilities Commission budget. I'd like to ask the through the chair, through the speaker, a question of the Finance Committee as to whether or not there are identifiable funds in the Utility Commission's budget for the purposes of consumer protection.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I chair the Subcommittee on Commerce and Economic Development, which contains the APUC budget. And there are, as Representative from Kodiak mentioned, 45 people. The funds are not so broken out, but they do have adequate staff. They have attorneys. They have utility financial analysts. They have tariff analysts. They have engineers. They have five public utility members, two of which are consumers. So there is not a line item in the budget that says, you know, X dollars for consumer advocacy. No, but it does fall within. I think that's what the debate is about here today, is whether or not the budget does contain funds for advocacy. And I maintain that the people they have on board and the funding that we give them in part is for consumer advocacy.
Representative Gull.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It seems that the debate has turned a little bit here as to juxtaposing the role of this particular individual who would be retained under this legislation versus the role of the Alaska Public Utilities Commission. And I think there's a basic misunderstanding that was expressed by my friend and colleague from Homer, and I'd like to try to clarify it. I think it's also being raised by the Anchorage representative's question. I think it falls to the difference between what a public interest group is, or a group who is empowered to protect the public interest, versus a group that's empowered to advocate for a particular segment of the public, in this case the consumer. The Alaska Public Utilities Commission's mandate is to protect the public interest in relation to the operation of public utilities under its regulation. And I think that means both to protect the fair rate structure on behalf of the consumer, and at the same time to ensure that the utilities are given the funds they need and the flexibility they need to go forward. I regret very deeply that over the past few years, certain utilities and their representatives have come forward to attack the Public Utilities Commission. I believe that it's understandable that people who are regulated may, not be pleased to be regulated, but I do not believe in any sense that the Alaska Public Utilities Commission is a consumer advocacy group. Rather, it's a group that is mandated specifically to act in that quasi-judicial capacity, which means to weigh and balance
the interests of the consumer, the interests of the utility, and by combining them appropriately, hopefully to reflect the public interest. For that reason, although the arguments that are being made and the explanation for why this position is necessary have been well stated and don't need to be restated, I think it's important to differentiate between the roles and to say once and for all that those people who maybe object to the existence of the commission do so because they do not wish to be regulated, but that is not to imply that that commission is in any way a consumer advocacy group. I do support the bill. I think this position would be very helpful, just as it is helpful to have representatives of different factions, if you will, come before a judicial body. But the point of my remarks is just to differentiate for the record that the Utilities Commission is there to protect the public interest, which is much more general than either the interest of the utilities or the interest of the consumers, and I would hope the debate could progress in that direction. Thank you.
Are there any other representatives that have not spoken upon this bill in third reading that would care to speak? Representative Jenkins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise about 3 points. One is, I think that the members of this committee, or members of this House, must realize, and I think we do, that in some ways the very makeup of the APUC itself is a redundancy to talk in terms of rate cases. Because the original legislation set up a 3-member commission, one of which was an attorney, one of which was a professional engineer, and the third was a certified public accountant. A little over 10 years ago, that legislation and that board was changed to include 2 new members, and those were supposed to be consumer members of that board. They didn't have to have a license to practice engineering. They didn't have to have a license to practice law, nor a registered CPA. I think that has to point up to me that there may well be, within the makeup of the board, and a redundancy, and in fact, a real consumer advocacy within the makeup of the board. What I'm convinced or concerned about is whether or not this additional staffing would indeed delay the process in a normal rate case. And I've seen various aspects of several rate cases over the last 20 years. In fact, I would generally say that the rate cases that I've viewed have been so convoluted and so much material that it's hard for me to imagine that too many stones were not unturned. And the suggestion then is simply that if this new legislation can prove to me that my consumers out there are not going to have their rates delayed, their rate cases delayed, and looking back over the last 15 years, if I've seen that we would have been better served by an additional information into the rate cases that I've seen, I do not believe that. And I thank you very much for your time.
Representative Pinyalberry.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess basically I have some difficulty with labeling this bill as just a champion consumer bill, because if we're going to take $233,000 out of some other consumer service and put it into funding this new office, then obviously some other service to residents of the state is going without. If we're really trying to do something for consumers with regard to utility rates, then perhaps we ought to bring to the floor legislation that's languishing in committee that would roll back the revaluation scheme that the Sheffield administration has come out with on the Cook Inlet gas situation. That would do more to help the consumers in the rail belt and through the grid intertie system than this bill will ever do. I'm sorry that the sponsors of this bill have not seen fit to give us some evidence of need other than the general philosophical, theoretical benefits that would accrue from this bill, which I could concur with. But they haven't told us how anything would have been better had this office been in effect in the past, or actually what cases are coming up and how this new consumer attorney is going to do something specific for us in the future. Mr. Speaker, earlier in the debate, the representative who in front of me, I think, hit the central issue, which has to do with the fact that the Public Utilities Commission does have consumer advocacy responsibility, and it's part of their budget justification. So if we want to change now and take that out of there and put it into another office, I could support that. But I think what we should do, given the fiscal situation of the state, we should take the money out of the Public Utility Commission and put it into this this office. But the fiscal note does not indicate that we are going to reduce the Public Utility Commission's budget by 1 cent. We're in effect saying, well, we're taking this responsibility away from you, but we're going to pay you for it anyway. I just don't know if that is fiscally responsible in this day and age. Mr. Speaker, I think I could support the bill if the fiscal note was reconciled that way, and I at this time would move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill 162, Finance Amended, be returned to the Finance Committee so that the fiscal notes can be reconciled.
We have a procedural motion before us to refer back to Finance. Ready for the question? Shall committee substitute for House Bill 162, Finance Amended, be referred back to Finance? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? The clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
11 yeas, 27 nays.
The bill is still before us in third reading and under debate. Are you ready for the question? Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, thank you for your patience on allowing us to express various concerns. And I know sometimes we can get talked to death, but I think on a bill like this, there's been certain statements been made, and perhaps it's just a matter of reviewing what is available and what is not available to the public. For instance, right now, we do have a consumer protection division within the AG's office, and people can go to that office and perhaps express their concerns. However, I do know that many people told me when they do call the Attorney General's office, constantly they are rebuffed and told that their major responsibility is to protect the state from its citizens. And when they have grievances or complaints, they are told to go get a private lawyer, that he or she, whoever IAG may be, has the obligation of protecting the governor and the state. So I don't know how good our consumer protection agency in that department, division in that Department of Law is doing. Perhaps the individual supporting this, I don't know if they have called them at all and seen how many complaints they have received, what type of complaints, and what they've done about it. So that's another avenue that the public already has, although I understand their negativeness in calling it up. The gentleman from Juneau said that who is going to speak on behalf of the residents, who is going to speak on behalf of the people. Well, that's why we are elected. That's why we get calls perhaps in the evenings or on weekend to address the concerns of our constituents. And, Mr. Speaker, I have, on behalf of constituents, called APUC on the regulations, on the rates. Sometimes it was on garbage rates or who was servicing them and who is not servicing. It was a complaint for a while there in the mobile homes, and finally that agency was moved to the Attorney General's office. But the main point is that we do have a number of avenues, and also the ombudsman person can receive complaints and on behalf of the citizens find out the legitimacy of their complaints and file a formal statement addressing their grievances. So there's many ways of doing it. The major point is, if there is a group that feels that APUC is not doing the job, then that is where the problem is, and perhaps we should look into that and change their direction. But it's clear to me, as the law is written under AS 4483, that they have that responsibility. And I see no way in which another agency developed at the simple beginning of $233,000. That's nothing compared to fighting the budget of another group with $4 million. I don't think we're going to gain on behalf of the people. As was expressed before, you're putting another layer of agency that poor citizen must go through, now four of them, to find out who's going to handle my concern. And all of them are saying, hey, look at him, look at that, look at this way. We can't do it.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to speak in favor of the legislation, and I'd like to refer to some of the notes from some of the committee meetings. The testimony given by APUC is that they support the legislation, the concept of the legislation, because it would help them to make better decisions. They also specifically noted that they are not a consumer advocacy group, that they are not, staff is not specifically directed to look at the best interest of the consumer, and that in some circumstances there were times when the interests of the staff, i.e. the APUC, and the consumer were different, and in that sense it would be helpful to them to have someone who'd come and present the point of view of the consumer. I urge the, everyone to support this legislation. Thank you.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Ringstedt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There's been a lot of concern going around about saving money. Is this going to do us any good? Is it going to cost us money? And I guess I've got some concerns, too. We put in another layer and hope they're going to do us some good. I'm curious for the majority leader, with ACAP over the last 3 years, that we've been putting some funding into that. Can you show anywhere where that's saving us any money? Do you have any numbers on that?
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I'd be happy to do that. I'm not sure we want to take the time now, but... the evidence is that the funding that's been provided to that nonprofit organization to save millions of dollars in ratepayer payments.
Representative Thompson, you've been seeking the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Two quick and, for me, last points. One, it was mentioned earlier in the course of the debate that not to vote in favor of this bill, the suggestion was, would be to abrogate our obligation to the people. Mr. Speaker, I want it clearly understood. For my part, I take no joy in objecting to a bill that speaks on behalf of the people. But I would also remind my colleagues that every decision we make is part of our obligation to people. We have been elected to make what I believe in the coming months were going to be some very difficult decisions. This is perhaps the first. The second point I'd like to make, Mr. Speaker, is I ask my colleagues to evaluate the expenditure of these funds and the creation of more bureaucracy, not in a vacuum. Do not evaluate this request in isolation, whether it in and of itself is a good idea. What you need to do is evaluate this vis-a-vis your favorite service. Are you willing to take this money out of your favorite program, vis-a-vis your favorite program, is this money well spent? Because, Mr. Speaker, our highest obligation is to the people, and that obligation is to spend their money wisely and only when necessary. Thank you.
Ready for the question. Question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 162, finance amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. From nay to yea, please.
From nay to yea. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Representative Taylor. Nay to yea. Does any other member wish to change their vote? Clerk, tally the roll.
24 yeas, 15 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 162, finance amended, has passed the House. Representative Clark.
Mr. Speaker, I move the effective date on Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 162.
Are there any objections to the effective date? Representative Ewling.
That's your roll call.
That's right. Thank you. The question before us is the adoption of the effective date. Are you ready for the question? Shall the effective date be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk tally the board.
34 yeas, 4 nays.
The effective date has been adopted. Representative Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on committee substitute for House Bill 162, finance, please.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on said bill. Would the clerk at this time please read the next item on today's calendar?
Section Senate Bill 187 by Rohde, Paul Fisher, Sturgiluski, and Kurtula, an act relating to adoption and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Judiciary has had Senate Bill 187 under consideration, recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 187 Judiciary with the same title, and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, concurring, Phillips, M.M. Miller, Grunberg, Taylor, and Clarkson. The Committee on Hess has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 187. Second Judiciary with the same title. No, excuse me. The Committee on Judiciary has considered Senate Bill 187 and recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 187, Second Judiciary, same title. Recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. Report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, signing do pass, M.M. Miller, Son, Grunberg, Pettijohn, and Phillips. Clarkson has no recommendation. The Committee on Finance has considered Senate Bill 187 and recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 187, Second Judiciary, with the same title, and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Adams, Chairman, signing do pass, Szymanski, Duncan, Larson, Porchot, Euling, and Cotton. Having no recommendation, Adams, Ringstead, Rieger, and Frank. I have one, two, three, four, five committee substitutes on my desk.
Five committee substitute, Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the second Judiciary Committee substitute for House or for Senate Bill 187 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the second Judiciary substitute? Hearing no objections, the second Judiciary substitute has been adopted. Do we have any amendments before us?
Not on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call, I forgot where we were.
Advancement.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the second Judiciary Committee substitute for Senate Bill 187 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the advancement of the bill from second to third reading? Hearing no objection, will the clerk please read the title of that bill for the third time?
House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 187, second Judiciary by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to adoption and providing for an effective date.
Is there any debate? Are you ready for the question? Representative Martin.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I have to strongly, personally object to this legislation. We've had it before the body in the 8 years that I've been a member, and every time I come to a very fundamental question, what right does a state or any government institution have to tell any of its citizens it does not have the right to find their parentage? And I take it personally, and I have a lot of other friends who have for years been trying to find their true heritage. This bill is a bureaucratic mess that if I care to find my parents or someone else cares to find their parents, we are prohibited. We talk about freedom of information and what's in the garbage, freedom of information from the FBI files, what they have on you. But the very fundamental rights of knowing who your parents are and who your heritage is denied. And it's also had the denial of discrimination. Most of this bill talks about the adopted child. But what about the child that is not adopted? What right does he or she have? Right now, thank God, according to this bill, I think they're free to find out not only their biological statistics, but also to seek their true parentage, their true heritage. So it discriminates that if a child, in my case, I think they're really lucky to get adopted. But maybe by this bill, they're not so lucky. Because always there is that desire of knowing your fundamental heritage. It also discriminates, what about your grandchildren? So I get married, don't know my parentage, but does it prohibit my grandchildren from ever finding out? Or my children from ever finding out? And why should we set up a bureaucracy that said, well, we were searched? It also says that after the parents died, that information is still withheld from those children. They may be 40 or 50 years old and still seeking the very fundamental heritage. I think that is really discriminatory. We certainly have a difference in treating all people equally in the Constitution of this state and under our nation. It doesn't matter for what reason or under what circumstances an individual was born. Some are less fortunate than others, if you consider that. But at least they're born and they're allowed to live in America and become adults in their own rights. but not complete adults. Whoever the parent was, for whatever reason, abandoned that child, or had to in many cases, under legitimate reasons, and someone else adopted them. But they were prohibited from finding out why or whatever happened. We see numerous articles almost every week now where sons have been separated, twins have been separated, they found each other, some accidentally, some deliberately looking, they found the mother, they found the father, and very, very joyous occasions. This bill is going to prohibit that. And I think that is a crime, because you allow the parent to forever withhold basic information from that person who, once they become an adult, can never find out. It may have been 10 years ago or 20 years ago that the child was born, and for some reason there had to be a separation from the natural parents. Those things can be overcome with ease, with humanity that we have for each other and compassion, not with scare tactics that suddenly when you find your mother or you find your father, there'll be a traumatic experience. I can tell you there's an awful traumatic experience for people who don't know their parents for years and years. And it's a very joyful occasion for when they do find them. So in general principle, I'm absolutely opposed to this kind of legislation for the government to prohibit anyone from knowing their natural rights.
Cato.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My attitude on this bill is entirely different, possibly because I have a very emotional connection with it. The laws of our land and the courts say that the child, adopted child, shall be protected by those parents and by the confidentiality that is in their sealed records, so that perhaps the traumatization that the minority leader is speaking about will not occur. As the child becomes old enough to know their own mind, know what they want, then those court records can be opened. That's exactly what this bill does. In many cases, the minority leader has emotionally said that there's many times reunions, happiness, joy. In many cases, also, just exactly the opposite is true. And I feel that this is an excellent piece of legislation that will allow that child to find, and by the way, the word is natural parents, not parents, find their natural parents at a time in their life when they are capable of making and rendering their own decisions.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, perhaps I should indicate what the philosophy of this particular subject is. It's found on page 4 of the second Judiciary Committee substitute. Actually, this was a very difficult question that members of both committees had to deal with, because on the one hand you have the feelings and the rights, as it were, of the natural mother, of the biological mother. You have on the other hand the rights and the desires of the child, particularly as that child becomes an adult and feels a strong desire to know, perhaps, who his or her natural parents were. I, at least, based my leanings on this subject in the direction of the natural mother for this reason, Mr. Speaker. Usually we're talking about a fairly young woman, not always all that young, but most of the time I think we're talking about a teenager. Maybe 16, 18, maybe 20 years old, something like that, facing a hard, heart-wrenching decision. She finds herself pregnant, perhaps for a variety of reasons, either does not want to or cannot or for any other reason get married. And she basically has three choices, and this is a choice that she has in Alaska. She can have an abortion. She can opt to have the child and raise the child herself, or she can opt to have the child and allow the child to be adopted. That's a terribly heart-wrenching decision for that child to have to make, and I think all of us probably just feel for any young woman that's put in the position of having to make one of those three choices. I think we have arrived at a solution to the question that's fair to that woman, and ultimately I think probably as fair as we can be to the child, by saying this. As you can see, there's a series of choices that the young woman would make.
She can first of all check off spot number A, and which would provide, say, okay, it's all right, provide to my biological child a copy of the child's original birth certificate and my name and address when the child is 18 years of age or older, if requested by the child. In which case, the files are open to the child. No question about it, the child can, and the mother will have agreed to this in advance. Or she can choose option B, which is do not provide to my biological child a copy of the child's original birth certificate or my name and address unless required by law or court order. It might be needed for some extraordinary situation, in which case a court order might be necessary. But under most circumstances, her decision in opting to let the child go to full term and be born and be adopted is based on the assumption that this very, very difficult situation in her life is going to be able to be closed. And indeed, that may be one of the very reasons that she decides that she will allow the child to live and that she'll allow the child to be adopted, because she thinks that this agony that she's going through will at least be ended when the 9 months is over, and she can put that behind her. But I want to emphasize that at any time, that woman can change her mind. This is not an irrevocable decision on her part. Okay, then the third option would be this. If my biological child, when 18 years of age or older, requests a copy of the original birth certificate or my name and address, these are my instructions. I want to be notified of the request in the following manner, by certified mail or by, you know, personal service or whatever. In other words, the mother is saying, I'm just too mixed up right now. I don't know what I think about this situation. Maybe when 18 years from now, maybe I'll want to allow my identity to be known, but I don't know, so ask me then. Or the person can say, I do not. If I don't reply to you within 90 days, go ahead and provide the information. And Mr. Speaker, I just want to repeat again, I think all of those options open to the mother give her the greatest amount of latitude in a time when, I repeat, she's trying desperately to decide, number one, if she's even going to have this baby. And I think the fact that she can make these options and can make these choices will indeed, in a lot of cases, be the factor that will allow her to decide that she wants to go ahead and bring the baby to term. I fully recognize the predicament then that this puts puts the child in, whose biological mother, has opted not to let her identity be known. But Mr. Speaker, I just really truly believe that although that is a tough, tough thing for the child when he's or she is 18, it's a decision that really has to rest only and should rest only with the biological mother at that time. I don't think any of the rest of us sitting on here on this floor can say that she can't make that decision or she shouldn't. And we've given her a wide range of options so that she can choose any one of those options, and she can even change her mind completely later on and change her mind. So I think it was an agonizing subject. It's an agonizing process to have to come to the conclusion, but I think that this committee substitute goes the farthest we can in being fair to everybody concerned. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't want to disagree with the comments of the Judiciary Chairman. My concern actually is whether there is a loophole to go contrary to that. And my question is on page 9, lines 25 and 26, section C. The court may issue a protective order or other order that is in the best interest of a minor who is to be adopted. Basically, my question is, how much leeway does that give the court to go in directions contrary to what is provided elsewhere in this bill? What is a protective order? What is an other order? And what latitude does this give the court to offset all the things that we are enacting elsewhere?
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the question from my friend from South Anchorage. And I'd like to, if I may, as a person who worked on this bill a little bit, explain exactly what it does. It does basically four things. First, it includes the provisions of House Bill 2 by my other friend from South Anchorage and Potter's Marsh and Bird Creek. That particular...
And et cetera.
That particular bill is in line with some of the best adoption laws that are being promulgated around the country now. And it allows adoptive parents to learn certain non-identifying medical information. For example, hereditary diseases, things like this that a child may have. And literally, that bill will probably save a number of children's lives. We've put that in here. The second thing the bill does is it takes the original concept from the senator from District G, who's the prime sponsor, and a number of other people, to allow, in certain cases, adult adoptees and their parents to reunite. And this has been discussed by the minority leader and the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. And the reason for that is because right now there is a regulation that does not provide for a balanced approach. And this regulation, Mr. Speaker, is 7 AAC 05.730, which states that the state registrar, that's the registrar of vital statistics, may open all or part of such sealed file, that's the adoption file, for inspection by the person whose record it is, if of legal age. That provides no check. And there was a lot of concern that this could be very disruptive in adoptions that are long past. And so what we've done, and this bill, and I would ask the members to search their memories, in this second Judiciary Committee substitute, I don't think we've ever had a bill, at least that I can recall in my short time here, that has gone through so much study and care. And we've provided, I believe, Mr. Speaker, a very balanced approach that has been discussed extensively by the distinguished chairman of our committee from Juneau, that allows the natural parent to state exactly what he or she wants. That's the second thing the bill does. The third thing the bill does is to clear up a number of technical problems that those of us who practice in the area find from day to day, such things as how you notify people, such things as the kinds of...